What are the names going to be? The Flat Worlds versus the Hoodies?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. Back for another week. We're a week and a half away from the start of the NBA regular season. I know that everyone's drafts are really, really ramping up now with a big chunk of them coming towards the end of this week. So what we're going to do now is we're going to have a look at what has transpired so far in the NBA preseason and what of that can we actually make use of in terms of how it's going to translate to the regular season. It's not an easy task, and you can never be 100% on that because coaches are notoriously playing their cards close to their chest. But myself and Kyle McEwen are going to try and break down as much of that as possible. Kyle, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Josh.
Now, Kyle, this is everyone who is listening to this podcast, strap yourself in. We get the feeling it's going to be a pretty long one. I'm sure it will be. It's not like either of us are short of words in general. So this one could be a long one, but we've got 30 teams to talk about. We've got preseason action to get to.
Let's get to it.
But before we do that, Kyle, the NBA did have an announcement last week, and I've had a few people ask me, as I'm sure you have as well. The NBA announced that they're introducing an official fantasy basketball scoring system. Do you want to explain what that means, or what actually is this announcement and how it pertains to fantasy basketball?
Yeah, there's a couple articles out there that'll get a little bit more in depth about how it came to be and why they're doing this. But it's mostly marketing. They want to be able to kind of bridge the gap between people who are playing DFS and people who are playing season-long fantasy by saying we're going to have a default scoring system, and it's going to be points-based that is essentially just like FanDuel. So you're going to get 1 point for every point scored. You're going to get 1.2 points for every rebound. You're going to get 1.5 points for every assist, and then you'll get 3 points for every steal and every block. And then you'll get a negative 1 point for every turnover. That's the FanDuel scoring system, and that's what they're going to use for the default systems on ESPN and Yahoo as well. So, and it's really, just like I said before, it's just to bridge that gap between season-long players and DFS players.
So that is FanDuel's default scoring. It never used to be, but they have changed it this year. They can all bring it in line. For some reason, DraftKings is not changing theirs. They're still keeping their old wacky format of three-point bonuses and double-double bonuses and triple-double bonuses. But FanDuel, ESPN, and Yahoo will all be changing their system to that same scoring system. Again, trying to bring more people in so that when people speak about, you know, points leagues and fantasy, they've got a real baseline. Now, of course, you and me, Kyle, we're still going to be preferring, you know, category leagues. We like the challenge, the extra strategy there, but having a default, and when people ask me about points leagues, oh, you're going to talk about points leagues, what about this trade in a points league? It's so hard because every league is different. Some leagues will go, we offer a minus 0.25 for every field goal missed, or we have 5 points per block, or we have 1 point per rebound, and it changes the value significantly. But now that we've got a default system, which is the same as FanDuel, you know, referencing points league stuff will be a lot easier, assuming that people are using the default. Now, a lot of people who have got long-standing points leagues, they're just going to keep doing what they're doing, so those same problems are going to arise. But being able to address points leagues, this doesn't change my opinion necessarily on points leagues, but I do like the fact that the NBA is trying to get more people into fantasy basketball, and you know, despite the fact that fantasy basketball is growing at a significantly high rate over the last few years and has surpassed fantasy baseball in terms of popularity, which is something that I know we're both excited about, Kyle. But having this standard scoring system, I think, is a big way to bringing more people in. And then they can explore any other formats after that. So it is good news in that sense. And we're actually going to be doing a points league draft tomorrow, Kyle, just to see how it all pans out with this new scoring system.
Yeah, we're going to play that league out too. It's an expert league, and it'll be really fun to see how the rankings break down, to see how the draft plays out, to see how the strategy changes for people. And just, it'll be fun throughout the season to see how much it kind of correlates with DFS play, and to be able to say, look, hey, we're talking about DFS at the same time we're talking about season long stuff, so that you don't, you know, I mean, in some respects, if this became the norm and we didn't have categories and we didn't have, you know, rotisserie and head to head, it would streamline your podcast a lot more, I think.
It would. It would definitely, it would cut down a fair bit of the time as we're talking about all the same scoring systems. One thing I do have noticed, and not trying to give away too much, is that DeMarcus Cousins becomes a significantly more valuable player in this standard scoring system, like potentially a top five or top six guy. And people would be hesitant in taking him there, but based on that scoring system, he becomes a super valuable player. So that's my initial takeaway from this default scoring system. It does drop guys whose value comes a lot from efficiency. So Karl-Anthony Towns, you know, he drops off a little bit there, but interested to see how Boogie comes out in that draft, because I think he's going to rise up in the ranks. But that's not what we're here to talk about exclusively, Kyle, because we have got 30 NBA teams to talk about in terms of preseason. We're going to go through them alphabetically, and we're going to go through, you know, sort of things that we've noticed, things that we might be important for standard league players, for deeper league players, just whatever sort of crap that we've noticed from watching way too much poor quality preseason basketball. Mm-hmm. And we'll start with the Atlanta Hawks. One thing that, or the first thing that I noticed here is DeAndre Bembry was expected to miss the start of the regular season with a triceps injury. He said, "Nah, I'll be back. And you always take this a level of skepticism there, but he's back. So people in deeper leagues who are going to be, and I think he's going to have use because he is going to be a wing who can provide. I think his first game back, he had 5 assists in 20 minutes. He can be that secondary ball handler, creator type player. So with you know, Kent Bazemore ahead of him, Marco Bellinelli in the mix there, Bembry could find himself in a decent role, but it's good to have him back. I think the one that most people in standard leagues want to know about, Kyle, is the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, who is bombing threes now.
Yeah, we got Dwayne Dedman taking some threes. Do you feel like this is legit going to carry over to the regular season, though? Or is this just kind of like preseason testing the waters?
It's tough. Over the past few years, we've had it happen. You know, Al Horford started taking threes and went, "Oh, shit, what's going on here?" Then he hit over 1 a game. Yeah, Marc Gasol started doing it. And then I think he started doing it 2 years ago in preseason, but didn't do it in the first regular season, but then did it in the next regular season. Brook Lopez, the same thing. Started taking him in preseason a couple of years ago, and then last year hit almost 2 threes a game. It's really hard to get a read on what is actually real. We've got Yusuf Nurkic taking threes. We've got Tim Mozgov taking threes. We've got Dwight Howard taking threes. Andre Drummond. I don't know. I don't know which one of these is real. I feel like Dedman is realer than Howard and Drummond, but he's taking almost 2 threes a game in the preseason. I'm not sure at that volume it's going to be real, and I'm not really, you know, banking on that happening throughout the regular season.
Did you actually see Dwight Howard attempt those three-pointers? Because I didn't see that on tape. And some of these games are really hard to get preseason action available for.
That was the screwy game where it said that Andre Drummond was like 4 or 5 from three. So I don't really know exactly.
Because I went and looked at like the play-by-play log in the box score, and it said like a 19-foot three-point jumper,
which is
not possible.
I don't know. I don't know what it means. I don't know what that game in particular, that Charlotte-Detroit game, was really weird. The box score kept changing. Like I said, Drummond was 4 or 5 from three at one point, and then he went down to 3 or 4. Then he went down to 0 of 1 and just kept changing throughout the game. That was also that he was 5 of 6 from the line, which turned out to be real. So I don't know what the hell was going on in that game.
No, and that's actually been a slight concern with me with looking through some of these box scores, is like feeling as if some of the data is not right, because we've seen nights where it appears they're putting in some kind of new system. I think I saw somebody mention that on Twitter today, actually. So, which, I mean, that's what we need, the stats. That's what we're using for the fantasy game. So we need them to be reliable. And like, and what really sucks is it is difficult sometimes to go back and look at the tape, because it may have only been streamed on Facebook and then it's not available on the NBA app. At least here in the States, it's not. So I don't know if it's, you know, available on the League Pass International, but anyways.
We couldn't see that game. There's been numerous games that we haven't been able to see. But what the NBA is doing is they are going back and correcting the box scores the next day. So I'm going to actually bring that up now, that Detroit-Charlotte game, and have a look at the corrected box score, because especially for like preseason DFS tournaments, a lot of them, you have to have stat corrections the next day because they are going back and changing it. So let's have a look. Dwight Howard took, apparently, according to this corrected box score, he did take 2 threes in that game. So And Drummond took 1 and went 6 of 8 from the line. So, yeah, it was corrected down to that. So, and Dwight's made noise about, and I know we're talking Atlanta here, but Dwight has made noise about taking threes in the offseason, and it happened. But I want to get back to Dedman, because in limited minutes, he's been impressive. 10 points, 4 rebounds, a block a game, 74% from the field. To me, he is a guy that I can't really see a scenario, Kyle, where he's not a top 100 player this season.
It's tough for me, because it looks like John Collins is primarily playing at center, and you just wonder when you know, what I think the thing about Atlanta is, yes, we're seeing that Deadman is taking 3-point shots this preseason, but like other than that, there's nothing necessarily that we weren't already assuming was going to be happening. Like all the guys that we thought were going to be in the starting lineup are going to be in the starting lineup, and a lot of the question marks around the rotation remain. Like we still expect we expect Dennis Schroeder and Torian Prince to get as many minutes essentially as Budenholzer is willing to give them this season, because they're the two main blocks. But then like Bazemore, Deadman, Ilyasova, and then a group of guys off the bench, including Bembry and John Collins, it's really hard to know who's going to end up with the most minutes, because when do they shift gears from being, okay, we're competing, to we just made a trade of one of our veterans, or you know what, look at what we are. We are a rebuilding team. Let's just get our John Collins needs to get more experience against starter level players. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's really hard to discern at what point in the season that the gears are going to shift. So it's hard for me to get too much behind a guy like Deadman.
Collins has been superb in terms of his rebounding. He's averaged 8 rebounds in 18 minutes a game. He's really, and that's something we knew about him. He was a super aggressive rebounder. His shot hasn't really gone in yet. Neither has Bazemore's, but he has looked impressive. And he is a guy that at some point, when they make that pivot, he is going to be, I think he'll be a must own player. Now, whether they start him next to Deadman or in place of Deadman. One thing I haven't been worried about really though is Mike Muscala, who hasn't really looked like he's going to be cutting too much into Deadman's playing time. The risk there is Collins, I guess. But there was that concern, or maybe Muscala's going to cut into Deadman. I haven't been too concerned about that. And we don't need Deadman to get 29 minutes a game to be a super valuable guy. If he gets 24 minutes a night, 25 minutes a night, he still has that, you know, borderline top 100 sort of value. And I think that's fairly achievable for him for the majority of this season. But as you said, Schroeder, Prince, they're just doing what we expected them to do. And there's not much else on the Hawks. But let's move to the Brooklyn Nets. Kyle, what have you liked most there with Brooklyn?
It's, you know, you're still waiting for LeVert and Crabbe to get back, which they're supposed to play tonight, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to, I think, reveal a few more things for us. I haven't been necessarily shocked by anything. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson had a really, like, 4 assists in one of his games, looked really nice there. And Hollis-Jefferson, the one thing I worry about with Hollis-Jefferson is the fact that he wasn't drafted by the current guys in that organization, and so I worry that he's not one of their guys. But at the same time, he's starting at power forward right now with Crabbe out, and I think he's going to keep. Do you know if he started there? Anyways, I think he's going to continue to start there. I think Carroll should move to the bench, and if Carroll moves to the bench at power forward, that shifts things around, I think, in at other positions too, because this team is so malleable about how they kind of consider certain players as far as what positions they can play and what they can't.
One thing I've been impressed with Rondé is his offense. Like he's shooting the ball okay. Like I know it's only 2 games, but he's at 60% from the field. He's at 11.5 points, but he's been taking some long twos. They've been going in. He's looked comfortable. The threes aren't there, but he hasn't taken any of them. The steals, the rebounds, the passing. I thought he's looked impressive, and he is a decent late round guy. I've been happy with D'Angelo Russell and Jeremy Lin. They're sort of alternated big games, but even in the other games, they've been decent and showed that they could work together. I don't think we have too much concern in terms of those two playing minutes and getting their role. Now, it will be interesting when Crabbe and LeVert are back, but I think that those two should be taking back seats to Lin and Russell there. I guess the big question is, what happens with Carroll? Does Crabbe automatically come in and play more minutes? Now, I know some people are pretty high on Allen Crabbe for this season. Are you? Because I'm not. I just don't think he does anything. He hits threes. He's fine as a late pick, but I don't think he does much at all.
I think he just fits well in a lot of regard with that Lin and Russell backcourt, because they're going to be handling the ball every possession essentially and bringing it up, and then you can just kick out to Crabbe and he can hit those threes. Carroll looks better, so you wonder how many minutes he's going to demand. And the big question mark about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, it's not his talent. It's not whether or not he's going to continue to be a good vet player. It's for fantasy. It's, is he going to play 26 minutes, or is he going to push closer to 30? And or is there going to end up being a timeshare where he's playing 24 or 25 minutes because things get weird with the Nets? And it's hard because Atkinson has said that he still plans on playing, doing essentially what he did last year, which is playing everybody.
Yeah, he said he's going to play 11-man rotation because of the depth and the young guys. One thing I've been surprised about is why is Quincy Acey playing minutes? He's been okay in those minutes. He's hitting threes at an elevated rate. But I don't know why they're playing him at center when they've got Jarrett Allen, who they could be getting some minutes. So who's looked all right himself, but I don't see Acey or Allen really having much of an impact in terms of standard leagues. But that's been a weird, I guess, development. And another thing, I haven't been too concerned about, you know, Trevor Booker's going to come and start and he's going to take all these minutes. From what I've seen, I don't think that's a real concern.
No, Trevor Booker, he's coming off the bench this year all year. The question to ask about Trevor Booker is, when everybody's healthy, is he like, where does he get his minutes? Because if Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Damari Carroll have taken all the power forward minutes then where does Trevor Booker play? And the only place to really slot him in is maybe as your backup center. But then you're still going to want to get Jared Allen minutes. Like, you're still going to have a three center rotation. So which means we're going to see Mozgov limited, and then you're going to, because it seems like Jared Allen's going to be in the rotation.
I would think so.
Pretty early, if not from opening night. And he may not get a ton of minutes. It might be 8 to 12 minutes a lot of nights, but that's going to take away from the potential that Mozgov would have. And yeah, those Quincy Acey and Trevor Booker, I think they're both going to get any leftover backup center minutes to where they want to go with the small ball options there. However, Atkinson also said he's going to use RHJ and his 7'3 wingspan at center for certain points.
It's so weird this team where you look at it and you go, okay, well, we've got, you know, who's going to play at center here? Then you go, I got Carroll and Hollis-Jefferson at the four playing those minutes. And you go, well, who's going to be at the three? Well, there's LeVert and there's Crabb. And you go, well, who's going to be at the two? And then they can, oh, well, then we've got Sean Kilpatrick who can come in as the backup there. Okay, well, who play at the one? Well, Spencer Dinwiddie can come in. So they're really shit, but they're
Joe
deep.
Harris has been banging threes too, right?
Joe Harris said he wanted to shoot 45% from three or something this season. Joe Harris played 20 minutes a game last year, which is unbelievable to me. He's not going to do that. But they have got all these guys. They've got like a roster full of eighth men, basically, or about eighth men on this team, with some guys with potential, obviously, like Russell. We know what Lynn can do, LeVert, all these guys, but they've just got this bunch of players that is going to confuse things for big chunks of this season for us. Now, Kyle, I know you want to talk about Boston and what you've seen from them this preseason, so you can kick off your thoughts on the Celtics.
They're just... I think a lot of people look at the Celtics and they say, they only brought back four guys. There's not going to be any consistency, or there's going to be a lot of road bumps and peaks and valleys early in the season. And that very well may be as Kyrie and Gordon Hayward learn to play with, you know, all the other guys. But everybody they have is really talented, and a lot of them like know their role. Jaylen Brown seems to know his role. And here's what's getting interesting to me. We haven't had Marcus Morris there, but Jason Tatum, he looks ready to be a guy who can score as an off-ball guy or somebody you can give the ball to and say, go get us a bucket. And that's extremely valuable in the postseason. And I wonder if there'll be a point if Marcus Morris's shot's not falling, or if somebody else just isn't kind of filling their role well, that Jason Tatum ends up stepping into the starting lineup or just plays close to 30 minutes a night sooner than what we would think. I mean, looking at what he's been doing recently, I would say it's going to happen by the end of the season, or he's going to at least be close to 30 minutes. But I just don't know how his talent stays off the floor, to be completely honest with you.
I'm going to get back to that in a sec. I've just seen something come through saying that Rajon Rondo has a sports hernia, and he's going to see a specialist on Monday to determine if surgery is necessary. So that's pretty impactful for the Pelicans. We'll talk about them a little bit later, but that could move Drew Holiday back
to
point guard. Yes, make him more sexy, more minutes for Ian Clark. Etwan Moore becomes an interesting deeper league sort of player. Jordan Crawford gets a boost if Rondo is going to be out long term, because hernia is, we're talking 6 weeks, 2 months maybe. If he's out and has that surgery, like Markieff Morris has just had some sort of, you know, similar situation that kept him out. What's going to keep him out for 6 weeks? So that is an interesting one, and there's a real chance that Rondo doesn't get a starting role back when he comes back, because let's be honest, he's not that good, and that's a possibility. But let's get back to Boston. One guy we haven't seen yet in Boston is Marcus Morris, who's been dealing with his legal issues. So that, you know, I think that Tatum could get some of his minutes there. I also think that Aaron Baines is a better option than having Morris there. He's looked really good in preseason. We know that he's an efficient player, you know, super rebounder, which is things that Morris isn't in both of those areas. And do you think that Morris has any relevancy in standard leagues this season?
No, Morris could play 30 minutes a night. I just don't know if he's not going to get the ball the same way that he got it with Detroit. Maybe that makes him better, because in Detroit, Morris was like a Carmelo Anthony light. He would get the ball in the mid range and do a little bit of shucking and jiving, and then he'd make a fadeaway that was awesome. It was good to have somebody to go to get a bucket for with the Pistons, because there was a lot of times where you needed him to do that. But he's not going to do that with this Celtics team. He's going to be out on the wing, most likely spotting up. I just feel like he's more there as a defensive specialist. He's a small ball four, modern four version of Amir Johnson this year.
Yeah, I don't see him having any standard league value this season at all. One thing, though, and I talked about this with Greg on the podcast last week, my pick for sixth man of the year is Marcus Smart, and he's looked really good, yep. Kyle. He's hit 50% of his shots, again, small sample size, but if he gets to 40%, 42% of his shots, everything else is going to be there. He's going to play big minutes as their primary wing stopper. He is going to, he got 30 minutes last season. I think he gets 30 to 31 this year. Assists, rebounds, steals. He hits his threes. If he can start, he's a decent shot blocker as a point guard. To me, in a punt field goal percentage build, he's a top 100 guy comfortably. And if that field goal percentage comes up, then we're talking about a super valuable guy. So I'm really big on Marcus Smart. I thought there's a chance that he could improve his field goal percentage this season, and so far it's been a positive. Can't bank it on two games, but in his fourth season, I do have a level of confidence in him. He's not going to start. Jaylen Brown looks like he is going to start. But what have you seen from Smart so far? Anything to disagree with what I said there?
No, you like what you've seen out of Marcus Smart, the fact that he's more fit this season. He was always a scrapper, somebody who was a high-energy guy, so the fact that he's going to have even more energy and be able to throw his body around even more, maybe that's a little scary from an injury perspective, but hopefully it'll just give him more gas on his shots later in the game, too, so he can have a higher field goal percentage. Marcus Smart is an extremely talented and intriguing player, and it'll be a lot of fun to see how big of a jump he takes this season. And yes, his minutes will probably be somewhat limited just because he's going to come off the bench, but you're right. There's like nobody else that I think is going to even challenge him for sixth man of the year this year.
He's my guy. I think if the shot comes around, his defensive ability, everything else is really, really interesting for him. So I've been pretty excited to see what he can do. I said Jaylen Brown's going to start, but I don't really have a huge amount of value in Jaylen. There's plenty more late round picks that I want over Jaylen Brown as flyers in standard leagues. Let's talk Charlotte Hornets. We've spoke about it with Greg the other day, the Nick Batum injury that's going to keep him out likely until December. We assume that Jeremy Lamb is going to move into that starting lineup. He has looked good. Clifford looks like he's gotten over his whatever issue he had with Lamb. So it appears that Lamb is going to start. But what's your take on Lamb and his play, but what you do with him in terms of drafts or free agent acquisitions at this point in the season?
I think you're definitely looking at Lamb in your rotisserie leagues later, because he's going to help with your field goal percentage potentially if he's as turned on as he looked like he was getting to be last season, and hopefully what he's going to be this season. Lamb was the go-to scorer back at UConn, and when he came out of college, everybody was very high on his potential in the NBA as a scoring guard, as somebody who you could go to get buckets. And it seems like at age 25, I think he took a lot of steps forward last season with the Hornets in that backup role and having a steady role there with them. He's having this opportunity to start to begin the season is going to be a lot of fun to see exactly how much he has matured, whether or not he's going to be a consistent contributor. And if you can find him in the last couple rounds of your draft, I would be trying to take him. I think he went in the 11th or 12th round of a Basketball Monster rotisserie league that I drafted with a bunch of users on Saturday morning. So, and I was pissed when Lamb went, because I was definitely targeting him at that time. And you'll see, here's the one thing. If you look at my projections or Josh's projections, I think right now I have Lamb projected for 26 minutes per game for the season. But in the beginning of the season, he's probably going to be playing closer to 31 to maybe even 33 or 34 minutes a night. and he might completely take over that Nicholas Batum role. And if he does, you know, extrapolate that, you're talking, what, top 60, 70 potential here with him, maybe?
Yeah, I think he does have that potential. I've got him at 26 for the season as well, but you're right. He's going to be around that 30 mark unless Malik Monk comes out and really starts to show stuff. But with Michael Carter-Williams limited, with Julian Stone being a nothing, I think they want to run Monk as the backup point guard some of that time as well, because they literally don't. They don't have any other options, and Monk's the only other guy apart from Carter-Williams who can potentially run that backup point guard role. So, well, I think he'll get some extra run. I don't think that he is worth picking over Lamb, and there is that possibility that Batum's injury lingers and Lamb just entrenches himself in that starter's role and maybe drops down to 28 minutes a night or whatever when Batum comes back. But there is some real potential there. We've seen Dwight Howard start and Cody Zeller off the bench. Their minutes have been pretty even so far. On an equal minute basis, Dwight is by far the more fantasy-friendly player if you are excluding free throws, which you always should do when talking about Dwight. Zeller just needs way more minutes to be an impactful guy despite being probably a more impactful player on the court. And I haven't been that impressed with Frank Kaminsky so far. What have you seen from that big man rotation? Clifford's gone big in most of these games, I guess eschewing the small ball lineups that so many other teams are doing. We haven't seen much Michael Kidd-Gilchrist at the four. They're going quite big. What have you made of that?
I just don't know how much we can take from these Charlotte Hornets rotations yet, because they've been split so even. And are they really going to go that route in the season? I don't know if that's true. And that's so, yeah, it's hard. Like with Dwight and Zeller, it's hard for me to imagine them not having close to a split during the regular season, just because I feel like there's nights where Clifford's going to look at Dwight and be like, whoa, he did not bring it and he does not have it. And we're going with Cody for 30 minutes tonight. One more thing on the Batum injury.
Yep.
He's still going to go see a specialist, or he's going to get checked out to see if, like, surgery is still on the table, right? And if he has surgery, then he's out even longer.
Yeah, he's
right?
out like 3 months, 4 months, I think, perhaps. It could be almost the season for him. But from what Shams reported, Shams reported 12 weeks initially, so that is 3 months. So it could be longer than that, but it is still a significant chunk of time that he's missing. But the only positive thing, I guess, is it's his non-shooting hand, so there is some benefit there maybe, but it's not great. And would you draft Batum at all in a standard league?
I'm a little bit too afraid to draft him right now. If you have injured reserve slots, it's a super competitive league. He drops really late into the draft and you decide you want to, you're like, okay, the amount of talent versus the sure thing of the stats or, the confidence that I have that this player is actually going to have the role that they would have. Like you can, you're discerning there whether or not it's okay to take Batum at that time based on the players that are available. But it would have to be pretty late in a standard league.
Yeah. I can't see myself drafting him. Once guys are injured to start the season, they're just not situations I generally like to get myself into. Let's talk about the Chicago Bulls.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
One thing about the Chicago Bulls, Kyle, is they're taking a shitload more threes, which is always going to happen now that the three alphas are gone and we've got players who can actually shoot and space the floor. They're taking a significant amount of threes. We haven't seen Lauri Markkanen yet, who I believe is going to play in today's game. Nikola Mirotic is still going to start. Chris Dunn has a dislocated finger and he's going to miss the first 2 to 3 weeks of the season. So Jaren Grant is going to be the starting point guard by default. He's averaging 6 assists in his 3 games so far. Is Grant a worthy player for you to look at the end of drafts? Or do you think it's just going to be a complete rotational situation with the way that Hoiberg handles those point guards this season?
I'm terrified about every single player on this team and how the rotation is going to play out. Because, I mean, can you say because Paul Zipser playing pretty good.
Zips is the only person I can say, I reckon he's going to get 28 minutes a night. He's the only person I feel confident with, and that's such a weird thing to say.
But, like, why?
I don't know why. I know Hoiberg loves him, but I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
I feel like they've got so much comparable talent on this team. And with if we knew that Dunn was going to be out a lot longer, then maybe Jaren Grant would be more intriguing to me. But from night to night, it's going to be, I just don't know, man.
the thing you can do is you can treat your last you can treat your last draft pick as a waiver wire move. So if you want to take Grant with that last pick, and you can get, because Cameron Payne's out as well, there's no other backup point guard. The backup point guard is going to be Denzel Valentine most likely, unless something else weird happens and Hoiberg just goes, screw it. You know, Cristiano Felizio is being our backup point. Like, at this point, it's going to be Grant. So you might get for 3 weeks, 34 minutes a night for him. And as a last draft pick, that's fine. And then Dunn comes back and you piss him off. So you can treat that last pick as a waiver wire selection. You're not going, oh, maybe in February he's going to come to 30 minutes. No, for the first 3 weeks, he's going to get 33 minutes a night. Bang that in and then move on from someone else. So that's the way. And look, there's two ways of treating that last pick. Waiver wire selection. You can even use it and go, who's got the most games in the first 2 weeks, and use your pick that way. Or you can use it, hey, let's just see how things develop. But for me, Grant's going to have that value initially, and then it's probably going to disappear as Hoiberg starts shuffling guys in and out. The same's going to happen on the wings with Zipsa, Justin Holiday, and Denzel Valentine. Like, Valentine's averaging over three threes a game. Yes, it's on 63% shooting. And unless you're Kyle Kuzma, you can't continue that throughout an entire season. But he is getting also three assists per game. So I like Valentine as a last pick. I like Holiday for his ability to get steals. And Hoiberg said that he wants Justin Holiday to be their go-to scorer, which is a sentence I cannot believe that anyone is saying in 2017, at any point in history, Justin Holiday is our go-to scorer. But there's just so much crap on this team that potentially that could be the case. So Holiday, Valentine, Grant, all these guys are worthy of a last pick. What have you made of Mirotić, who started some of the games? Porter started the first one. Are we feeling any confidence in him? Because I know, you know, I like him, but I don't feel any confidence.
No, that's just it. Actually, the more we've seen from the preseason games and the fact that Justin Holiday is being talked about as their go-to scorer, and that Jaren Grant was starting over Chris Dunn to begin the preseason, it threw everything into question even more than it already was, because you're looking at the situation and going, oh, the two guys they traded Jimmy Butler for, Chris Dunn and, yes, Lauri Markkanen and LaVine, are both out to begin the preseason. And you're going to start Jaren Grant at point guard? Like, do you not believe in Chris Dunn? Because if you're not believing in Chris Dunn, I don't know if I can believe in him to get the minutes that he's going to need for fantasy. And yeah, man, Justin Holiday is the go-to scorer. I'm at a loss, complete loss.
Yep, this team is confusing. But yeah, Mirotić, Valentine, Holiday, Grant, Dunn, Lopez, these are all guys that you take probably outside the top 100, and they all could be valuable. We just have no idea. And preseason shown me at least they're going to take more threes. I've shown sparks from Holiday, sparks from Valentine. Grant's going to get minutes by default, and that's pretty much all we can really take out of this Chicago Bulls team at this point. The Cleveland Cavaliers, weird. We haven't seen LeBron yet.
LeBron times.
So it's hard to read too much into this one, Kyle. We saw Jeff Green score quite a few points today. He's probably not going to be in the rotation each night. Jay Crowder's looked all right. Kevin Love getting a lot of usage. Derrick Rose had a decent game the other day, but these guys aren't playing any minutes. Like, I don't know what to get out of the Cavs preseason so far.
I mean, I love the fact that Love is starting at center, because that opens up the driving lanes for Rose and Wade. Yep. And it gets Jay Crowder into the starting lineup. So I love all of those things. But you're right. Without LeBron there, we don't get an idea of how the pecking order is going to go. I mean, we can have a somewhat of an idea. It looks like Derrick Rose is really kind of taking up that idea that he's going to be more of a facilitator. But at the same time, he banged in a pull-up three the other night, and he made a sick, sick drive with tons of English off the backboard, you know, vintage D Rose.
It does look like that he is willing to take the usage down a notch. We need Wade to be able to do that too. I think that Love should be the number two option on this team. Wade needs to take that step back as well, along with Rose, and that will work out. You have LeBron, have Love as your one and two, and then Wade and Rose as your three and four in that starting lineup, with Crowder being the defensive guy whose usage is obviously way lower than all those players. Then you got J.R. Smith off the bench, but it's so hard to judge without LeBron. Now, LeBron said he's going to be back for the final two preseason games. We'll get a bit more of an idea there, but it doesn't really change my mind. I don't want to draft Wade because I think that he's going to be quite limited this season. I'm not really sure what Rose is offering me. He's not a real high upside guy. Crowder's fine as a last pick with a little bit of extra minutes as a starter. And I really like Love in the third round. And LeBron is a solid top 10 guy. Any situation where LeBron falls outside the top 10, I can't get behind that. Can you?
it's are you worried about his free throws in a rotisserie league and you don't want to necessarily target him? But
not really.
In a general sense, okay.
It was bad last year, but I just feel like it was just a weird year. Like, there was just weird shit that happened with free throws all last year with guys dropping 10% on career numbers that made no sense. And I'd rather put more stock into the fact that LeBron's been a 73% guy for 14 years rather than a 67% guy for 1 year. Like, it just doesn't make sense that you can just drop that much in 1 year. And I feel like he will have addressed that issue. But that's you know, me taking a projected guess into the future.
And Kyle Korver messing with his free throw stroke mid-season. That's what did it, man.
It is.
What about Tristan Thompson's situation there?
Well, I know he's one of your good mates. So nothing. Like, I don't think he was draftable before this news of him moving to the bench. It does cost him a few minutes here and there. He's just literally, oh my God, I need to get some rebounds or field goal percentage for the end of the week matchup. That's it. Like, he's going to score nothing. He doesn't block shots at a high rate. It's going to be field goal percentage and rebounds. And even that, with a potential drop in minutes here, or a likely drop in minutes, is it's going to render him useless outside of 16-team leagues, maybe. I cannot see any way that I would want him in a 12-team format.
I feel like there's a potential for him to just lose a lot of minutes.
He could go down to 23 minutes a night, and I would not be surprised at all. I don't think he will, but I think there's a chance of that happening. He played 30 a night last year. I've got him down to 28 at the moment. I could see him going lower than that, though.
What if he only plays backup center minutes behind Love, and what if Love only plays at center?
That's a possibility, and they bring in, like, they use more Jeff Green and more Richard Jefferson to play those, you know, small ball four lineups behind Crowder there. That's definitely a huge possibility, and that does mean that Thompson's going to get really limited in that situation. That's going to be something that I want to see play out over the first week or so. But you don't want anything to do with Thompson in fantasy, I don't think, for this season. You got anything more on Cleveland, or should we move to Dallas?
Kendrick Perkins played in his second preseason game today.
Did he play today? Oh, wow. I didn't go that far into the box.
17 minutes.
Wow. Yeah, well, this is why it's so hard to get a read on what's happening with Cleveland, because he's not playing a single second this season in the NBA. He's not even going to be on the roster. But, of course, let's get Perkins those 17 minutes. The Dallas Mavericks' Seth Curry has a stress reaction in his leg. The reporting on this has been weird, Kyle. He's going to miss some time, and then Carlisle saying, oh, we're not quite ruling him out for opening night, but it's unlikely. I just don't know. Like, I think your best estimation is around the start of November, so 2-3 weeks into the season. It appears like they caught it relatively early. It hasn't developed into a fracture at this point, but it is obviously a concern, and it drops Curry down to maybe let's take with your last pick. But we just don't know exactly when he is going to be back and in that lineup. And while he is out, it's going to be Yogi Ferrell who moves into that starting lineup, playing alongside Dennis Smith as they did in Summer League. So we talked about Jaren Grant being, hey, if you want to take him with the last pick as a waiver wire type guy, would you put Ferrell in that similar class as it would with Grant, as being a guy that, hey, maybe for 2 weeks he can play 30 a night? Or do you think that Devin Harris, JJ Barea cut in and they're playing like 23, 24 a night?
Here's the thing. Like, a lot of these guys who are going to be stream guys for the first couple of weeks of the season, I wonder, like, there's, if I have concern about Seth Curry coming back, then yeah, maybe I invest in Yogi Ferrell and I'm like, all right, he's going to be the starting shooting guard for the first, you know, month or two. Then yeah, I get more invested in Ferrell as a stream option for that longer period of time. But in a general sense, in standard leagues, I'm going to be taking somebody who has high upside and hopefully season long value, unless it's a super competitive league and those guys are all gone. And then you just get to a point where you're looking at things and you're saying, you know what, the schedule's good for this team and that player, and that he provides the stats I'm going to need over the first couple weeks, or however you need to look at it for your team. And then yeah, I would go with Ferrell. But not knowing exactly how long Curry's going to be out right now, I don't know if I'd be willing to take Ferrell late right now in a standard league. And with Curry, there's part of me that still wants to grab him with my last pick right now, just because the potential is so high for him that I say last pick, but one of my last picks. But there's going to be a certain level of wanting to stay away, because with these stress reaction injuries you worry about when he comes back? Does it get aggravated and kind of flare up again?
Yeah, I'm all for taking Curry with one of those late picks. It maybe knocks him down a round or two, but we just don't know at this point. Ferrell has been good in preseason. He's shooting 52% from the field, 11 points per game there, hitting 2 threes. But he's just not going to have the same level of production he had last season with Dennis Smith around. Smith's look good. His field goal percentage is going to be a concern this season, as it is with the majority of rookies. Nerlens Noel is doing his defensive stuff, but his minutes are still the concern. Harrison Barnes is doing what he does, and that's nothing outside of scoring, really. Some people are really high on Barnes this season, Kyle. They're like, oh, he can be a top 60 guy. Like I saw him go super early in a draft that I did the other day, and I just don't see it with him. I don't see him changing any of those other things that he doesn't normally do.
He did work on his dribble more this offseason with the hope of becoming a little bit of a better distributor. I think he was hoping to average like 3 assists a game or something like that, maybe even 4, but that seems unlikely. I think everybody, you know, there's the people who are really high on Harrison Barnes either look at him from the perspective of rotisserie and they love his percentages, or they look at what he did last season, the fact that he was close to being a 20-point scorer per game at 19.2, and they say, oh, he's only 25. He's going to take another step this season, where it's like the situation is different. And with Dennis Smith there, Harrison Barnes isn't going to be, you know, option 1A with Dirk, essentially.
I agree. The other thing that's been interesting with Dallas is last season, post-All-Star break, Wesley Matthews turned into a guy that, instead of hitting 2.5 threes a game, he hit 1.5 threes a game, but he upped his assist rate. I think this is weird. Wes Matthews is not known to be a passer, but he was doing it and doing it a lot. And it's happened in preseason again here. He's averaging 3.5 assists in 19 minutes a game and only half a three. Like, he's not taking as many threes, and he's working as a wing distributor. So that changes the dynamics of his value. Like, if you value assists later more than threes, which I believe you should, then Matthews gets a little bit of a bump there for a guy that might throw in 3.5 to 4 assists a game. That can be valuable. Yeah, look, his scoring and threes will go down, which has been the basis of Wes Matthews' value. But it appears that there is a significant change in the way he's being asked to play, and it's actually working okay for him. Just so don't expect the same Wes Matthews. Expect a different statistical spread of his numbers, and that appears to be what's happened so far with him in the preseason. Jeff Withey also taking threes, Kyle. Every big man in the league just bombing away now.
It's insane, and I don't know. Like, so what does this do fantasy-wise, though? Does the fact that everybody is taking threes make threes less valuable, or does it make the guys who hit threes at an exceptional rate more valuable? Because if you can, you know,
I feel like
what does it do
less
fantasy-wise?
I think because you can just find you can easily stream threes off, like, pretty much anyone who you add off the waiver wire. Maybe they're going to give you half a three anyway. It's not like, you know, you can add a guy. You can't add Withy off the waiver wire in talking deep leagues and expect him to get 2 assists, but maybe you can add him and get 0.6 threes a game. Like, it's just finding that nearly every player is going to be able, not every player, but a big chunk of them is going to be able to give you threes when they can't do that with blocks, they can't influence percentages, they can't do that with assists, they can't do that with points necessarily. It does make them, I think, less valuable, and it takes away the shine of guys like, you know, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, as good as they are, but it just, when their value is coming a lot from those threes, and you go, well, maybe I'll just get my threes. Maybe I'll get 3 threes later on from Ryan Anderson, your mate, or from anyone else. Yeah, later on, I can grab Seth Curry, pick 140, and maybe he hits 2.7 threes per game. Like, this is all stuff that can happen. And yeah, I think it devalues those guys early on whose value comes significantly from the 3-point category, like a guy, especially Klay Thompson, where that's where nearly everything, 20 points is really nice from him, but everything else from him is basically coming from that 3-point category. So that's the way that I see it happening. It'll be interesting to see how much this 3-point barrage in the preseason carries the regular season. I believe we'll get an increased 3-point attempt rate this season over last season. It's been the case pretty much every season. Increased pace, increased 3-point attempt rate is what I believe we'll see this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely insane the fact that we're talking about Jeff Withey as a 3-point streamer in deep leagues.
Let's go on to Denver, everyone's favorite team, well, maybe not everyone's, my favorite team to watch anyway. Jokic looked a little bit passive, I guess, playing next to Paul Millsap early, but looked pretty good in today's game. Millsap and Harris.
No!
have been looking good. Shout out to Gary Harris for getting that contract extension, and shout out to the absolute cocks that follow Woj on Twitter. Like, why would you follow Woj and then when he tweets that Gary Harris got an extension and you just put down who? Like, what's the point of that? Like, if you're following Woj and you don't know who Gary Harris is, just give it away, man. Go watch something else. Like, I don't understand how you can have no idea who this is, or you're trying to be funny because it's not working, because it's not funny. It's just annoying. Ill-formed opinions in the Woj mentions are frustrating.
I mean, you can't say you're necessarily surprised, and
I'm not.
People are trying to be funny, but I think it's pretty hilarious how much NBA Twitter is in love with Gary Harris, because the amount of tweets I've seen from like all of NBA Twitter about all the dumb people who were ripping on, you know, I'm like, dang, I'm like, Gary Harris has his, he's got his shooters.
He does.
So
it's
good.
But he's looked great. I don't think we should have much concern about him. Millsap has been solid. Fareed has looked okay, but it looks like he's going to be out of the rotation on opening night with Trey Lyles getting that backup power forward spot. How do you feel about that?
Hell yeah, brother.
Absolutely. Wancho is the backup small forward. Jamal Murray is going to be rested in today's game. It appears that he has got the starting point guard, well, not quite locked up, but the way that they're treating him, it appears to be that way, but we're not 100% sure on that. What have you thought about Moutier and Murray in particular throughout the preseason?
You know, I mean, the first couple games, I wouldn't say anybody really showed out, but then Murray had that three-point barrage, I think that kind of solidified where he stands, to be completely honest. Like, that game, maybe Malone looks at that situation and goes, oh, Murray was playing with all backups in that game, so it would be good to have him with the backup unit so that we have scoring there. But it's just like, dude, come on. I don't think Moutier is showing enough to justify starting him over Murray, because Murray, I think, is showing so much as far as the depth of his talent that it would just be, I think it'd be a really poor decision not to start him. But that's, look, to be completely honest, like, part of that's now that's the narrative that's with the media. Everybody thinks Jamal Murray's going to start, but there is a little bit of, I think, hopeful wishing with everybody too, where we look around and we're just like, yeah, Murray's going to be way more fun to watch if he starts, because it means more minutes and blah blah blah.
That's true. I think we all want to see Murray out there because it is more fun. I do think that he has got that inside track to start, and he should be a guy that can crack the top 100 this season, but you don't want to go too hard on him. In most cases, like, if you're drafting him inside the top 50, I don't feel like that's a great way to go about it. But the Nuggets have looked good, and I feel like they're going to be a strong team this year. Let's talk about Detroit. Well, let's let you talk about Detroit, because they are your team. We haven't seen Reggie Jackson yet. Andre Drummond's dealing with pink eye after that game where he hit all those free throws. Something weird happened there. Let's talk. You know, what do you want to say about Detroit? There's lots to talk about here.
All right, let's talk about my boy Stanley Johnson starting at small forward this year. What do you think, Josh? Because he's a guy who small forward position is. It's kind of deep at the end of the drafts because there's a lot of potential players that you can grab at small forward, yep. But they also have their warts or their question marks about whether or not they're going to have consistent value or whether or not they're going to take the step we want them to take. And I think with Stanley, it looks like he's going to have consistent minutes this season. It's hard to imagine a situation where he's not playing big minutes for the Pistons, because they don't have depth at small forward. Their other small forward is Tobias Harris, who is going to start at power forward. So it's interesting. I think I saw Stanley Johnson get drafted in our rotisserie league the other day with Basketball Monster users, and it's, you know what, if he kind of finds the box that he needs to play within this season, maybe his field goal percentage can come up to something where you can tolerate it, especially if you pick the right nights to play him in a rotisserie league. But for his counting stats, it'll be interesting to see how many more shots he takes this year, whether or not he can provide consistent defensive stats or consistent a couple of assists with being able to take the ball up on the fast break. So the main thing is, you know, minutes are the most important stat in fantasy, and Stanley's going to get minutes this year. So the potential is there for him to become a fantasy relevant player from Jump Street, and he's not getting drafted in a lot of leagues.
No, I agree with you that he has got that starting small forward job pretty much locked up. It appears he's shot the ball okay. He's taken four threes a game. He's hitting them at 38%. Again, it's two games, but it's good to see him actually taking those shots. I think that's more important, the fact that he's feeling that confidence to take the shots that his defensive numbers are fine. I think he's going to start, and he's a fine guy to have in that mix as being your last pick. I've liked what we've seen from Henry Allinson as well. It looks to me, Kyle, and maybe I'm wrong, that he's going to be ahead of Anthony Tolliver in the rotation at this point, with Johnny Lua being the backup center behind Andre Drummond, and that's going to limit what Boban can do. That's my read on that front court. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, people are enamored with Boban for a multitude of reasons. His efficiency, the fact that he scores almost at will when he is out there on the floor, but he's a situational player, and he's been situational for Stan Van Gundy even in the preseason.
Yep.
So we've seen John Luehr be the primary backup at center in the preseason. When Drummond sat out a game with pink eye, Luehr started at center. Then they gave backup minutes to Eric Moreland because they plan on using Eric Moreland as a comparable Drummond type guy who's going to, just dunk and block shots, essentially. Boban's going to play in maybe 50% of the games if matchups play the right way. And it sounds like you mentioned, Josh, with Henry Ellenson kind of stepping up his play, being more consistent this preseason, especially with his three-point shot, the Pistons are looking at having Ellenson be their primary power forward or backup power forward behind Tobias Harris, which means Anthony Tolliver will be out of the rotation a lot of nights. Sorry, Boban fans, but I know that a lot of hype got built up around him off this offseason, but it was kind of unfounded.
Yep, I agree. I've been, railing against or pushing back on the Boban excitement machine. It just doesn't appear like it's going to be the case. What have you made of Luke Kennard?
The kid can get buckets, but have you read something where you're... Because you're in your notes here, you say Kennard over Galloway. I don't know if that's actually going
to
happen.
That was me forgetting to put a question mark in there.
Oh, okay.
So it was Kennard over Galloway, perhaps?
I mean, I would be okay with that. But you think about some of the other young pieces that this team is already trying to integrate, and I just don't know if Kennard's another one that they're going to throw in there, especially just the fact that they have so many new pieces. Avery Bradley, by the way, I think he does make the Pistons a playoff team this year, regardless of whether Reggie Jackson's there, because Bradley is Stan Van Gundy without being colorfully crazy, So, yeah, as far as just the demeanor out there and the requirements on defense and everything, Avery Bradley's going to be he's exactly what the Pistons needed as far as leadership and all that kind of stuff. And I'm usually not huge on that, but the Pistons damn well needed it with guys like Drummond and Reggie Jackson on the team.
Yeah, he's looked pretty solid. Let's talk about Golden State. They're ridiculous. I looked at their box score this morning because they played in China overnight, and I saw that Klay Thompson had 28 points in 13 minutes and Curry had 40 points, and I thought, high pace, they're playing in China. For some reason, I just thought they were playing against a Chinese team. I go, no, they're actually playing an NBA team, and they're playing the Timberwolves, and they've just gone bananas once again. I don't think there's nothing that really changes with Draymond, with Klay, with Curry, with Durant. They're just the same. Curry's going to have a big year. He's going to be a solid top six sort of a guy. Durant, we know where he is. These guys, they're just good. It's more the back end of the rotation. I've really loved what Jordan Bell has been able to do. I'm not sure where he finds those minutes with Zaza, David West, and JaVale McGee being the centers there, but if he pushed himself ahead of Damian Jones, maybe he's already ahead of Damian Jones in the rotation and started to get minutes if West rests or Pachulia gets injured, I wouldn't be surprised, and his fantasy upside is immense. Have you seen much of Bell this preseason?
No, I haven't watched Bell much this preseason, but I mean, watching him play in the summer league, it was one of those things where it was obvious that the way he plays the game, the fact that he's keyed in all the time, it's obvious that Jordan Bell is going to be able to carve out a role, or when they have extra minutes to give to somebody in the front court, he's going to be the one to get them. Yep. Well, a lot of the nights at least.
Yeah. So look, he is going to be an interesting streaming guy for defensive numbers, but I really do like him in Dynasty League. Uncle P has struggled, Nick Young, and he's got a hip injury. There's reports that maybe he might end up falling out of the rotation with the way that he's playing. They give more of those minutes to Pat McCaw and Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala. Omri Caspi, all those sort of players. But Young's going to have some three-point streaming value, but that's literally about it. There's just really not that much to talk about with this Warriors team. They're just settled. We know who they are, and we know what they can do. But the Houston Rockets, Kyle, obviously a change there. CP3 came in, and a lot of people were thinking the sky was going to be falling for James Harden. He averaged 11 assists last year. He'll probably average 6 this year. Like, no, that's not going to happen. I think we talked about this before. There's no one else on this team that knows how to pass or set up anything. Every assist is going to come from Paul, or it's going to come from Harden. So if the team gets 25 assists per game, 23 of them are going to come from Paul and Harden most of the time. And we've seen that through the preseason. They're getting 10 assists apiece, or 8 and 9. The numbers are there for them. No one else is going to get these assist numbers. I'm not really bothered. Yeah, look, Harden was so much better than everyone else apart from Westbrook last year, that a 25% dip in his production still makes him the number one player. And that's sort of where he's sitting now. And then you can make the argument for Giannis or Durant or Westbrook or whoever you want to take at number one, or Towns. It doesn't matter. They're all so bunched up and close. And on a side note, the amount of questions or posts I say, who's your top 10? People focus so much on that first pick, when in the end, it's probably one of the least important picks you make in a fantasy draft. And it's really hard to go wrong with that group of guys at the top.
In the first round this year, it's hard to make a bad pick because everybody's good at the spot that you're drafting. You're fine. You're not gonna mess it up. Unless you draft, Kyrie Irving number one overall or something like that. But I mean, whatever.
Yeah, look, it is gonna be hard to mess that up. So look, there's so much focus. Who's your top 10? I've got pick 3. Who do I take? In the end, it doesn't really matter. It's what you do in rounds 4, in round 5, in round 7. Like, what you do with those other picks, it really, really... Look, if one of these guys gets injured, you can't predict that. That's fine. But it's how you deal with it after that first round. Just take whoever. Just in that, if you got the first pick, who do you want? Do you want Giannis? Do you want Harden? Do you want Westbrook? You got pick 4. Take whoever falls to you and just move on from there. But the Rockets team, those assists are coming from Paul. They're coming from Harden. We've seen PJ Tucker get out there quite a bit. Ryan Anderson's been limited, which I'm sure will bring a tingle to your eye, or a twinkle to your eye, Kyle, as he seems to be a little bit more limited. But again, it's hard to know too much there. But I've been excited by Clint Capella. I'm really big on him this season. But I don't see much else really coming from this Houston team to really talk about.
No, I mean, the Chris Paul and James Harden look like they're going to be what they are, and they're going to get their assists. And then it's like what you talked about. It's how many minutes does PJ Tucker versus Ryan Anderson get at power forward, and how many minutes does Clint Capella get as the starting center? Is it going to be 26? Is it going to be 28? If it's 28, he's going to be what we hope he's going to be this year. So Luka Mbamute, he's going to get backup power forward and small forward minutes. And that, that's another reason why I am a little bit sour on Ryan Anderson this season, is because when that team wants to go small, I mean, why would you even bother putting Ryan Anderson at center? I mean, obviously you can do that, and that's fine too. It's kind of that Kevin Love look, but you got Clint Capella there already. I don't know.
Yeah, no.
You got to match up with Golden State. You got to match up with Golden State.
Let's move on to the Indiana Pacers, a new look Indiana Pacers team. Miles Turner has looked fantastic. I feel pretty good about taking him in the second round. He's blocking shots, he's scoring. The rebounding is an issue, but his percentages are fine. He's been awesome, Kyle.
It's amazing how, coming into the league, it was easy to gush about his fluid jump shot and how great he looks, but it looks bigger this year, which means he's a young guy, just continues to grow, and he's the longest tenured player on this team.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So he is the man there, and Oladipo has come in and he's looked good. Yep. Collison has looked good as the starting point guard. Yep. Lance Stevenson has looked good. But I don't want to talk about that too much. Just Miles Turner. In the Saturday Nine Cat Rotisserie League, I got Karl-Anthony Towns number 5 overall, and Miles Turner slid to me at the 20th spot in the second round. It was it was one of the happiest moments ever, because I'm so geeked about what Turner is going to do this year. That was my first real draft for the preseason. And to get Miles Turner on my first team, I don't know. I'm just so happy, man.
Yeah, that's pretty good. If you can get Miles Turner in the 20s, I think you should be pretty excited about that. He's looked great, as you said. Oladipo's looked great. Stevenson's looked solid. Darren Collison is the starting point guard. He is a great option. If you've gone bigs early, which is a good way to go, and you want to get some late point guards, Lynn and Collison are all going to be sitting there at the end there. He got 7 steals in one game, Collison. But the fact that he's playing so much more over Corey Joseph, to me, means that position That position battle is done. Bojan Bogdanovic has been starting, but Stevenson's getting more minutes than him, and that could be the way that they run off the bench. So I think Lance is maybe more a 14-team league guy at this point, but it's definitely one that I want to pay some attention to. And we've noticed Domantas Sabonis getting some backup minutes and playing over Al Jefferson. Do you think that's something that can stick through the regular season?
Yeah, it seems like Sabonis is getting like all of his backup minutes at center, right?
Yes.
For the most part, yep. Did you? Yeah.
Because
so,
TJ
at
least been playing at the four.
Yeah, which is awesome too. So I'm really loving what McMillan's doing with this Pacers team. Every decision he's making is like making me happy. The fact that TJ Leaf looks like he's potentially going to be in the rotation from on opening night, that's awesome. Who doesn't love seeing the rookies get in there and get a chance right away?
Yeah, so interesting to see what they do with Leaf. He's not going to have too much of an impact, but I like playing Sabonis there at center. Sabonis has been really good, much better than what he looked last season. So he's an interesting guy for the deeper leagues and is going to limit what Al Jefferson can do. The Los Angeles Clippers, it's hard to say that the Clippers are going to be fun because they just haven't felt fun for a long time, but they're going to be fun. They are super fun. Milos Teodosic has been out there, yeah, throwing dimes. He looks like he smokes cigarettes for breakfast. He looks like he's got a perpetual hangover. But he's super fun. Now, Austin Rivers is dealing with a glute injury that's going to keep him out a while. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means a month or it means 2 weeks or it means 10 days. I've got no idea, but Milos has been starting in his place. I assume we're still on the let's draft Milos with a late pick bandwagon?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, the scoring wasn't there in the first two games, but Milos is a freaking shooter. So anybody who is telling me like, oh, he's not going to score at all on this team, shut up.
He hit four threes
Milos
today.
Milos is going to score. Yeah, there you go. Yep. Exactly. Banging.
I think he had 15 points today.
And he's throwing full court underhand passes up to the other point guard. Like, what is going on? Yeah, no, Milos, one of your late picks, grab him because his talent is going to keep him on the floor on the offensive side. And yeah, you're going to get assists. You're going to get some scoring, you know, three pointers and some scoring from them. And the field goal percentage might suck, but you're getting them late as a flyer, like a decently high upside flyer who's going to potentially provide really consistent, pretty darn consistent production for you this season.
Blake hit three triples today as well. He's looked really, really good. He has got a massive chance to be a top 20 player, I believe, this season. Obviously, injuries are the concern with him, but he's looked really good. Danilo Gallinari has looked really good. Patrick Beverley's putting up good numbers. DeAndre Jordan seems to just be DeAndre Jordan, which is totally fine. The big surprise to me, I guess, is Wes Johnson's back from the dead after just refusing to play him despite having Allen Anderson and Paul Pierce as your power forward or small forwards last season. I don't know why that Doc has decided that Wes Johnson is back, but he is playing over Sam Decker as well. And we all know that if Wes Johnson gets 27 minutes, which he probably won't, but injuries could happen, he is a triple one guy. Like, he's a good shot blocker. He gets steals. He can hit threes. So deeper league people will want to pay some attention to Wes Johnson now that he seems to be back in Rivers' good graces. What did you make of that, Wes Johnson?
It's Rivers going back to the well of crappy small forwards to, you know, just annoy Clippers fans. So wait, why was Gallinari out? Was it just rest?
He had a sore foot. Yeah, I know.
Oh man. Like that, dude, Gallinari's sitting there at good points to draft this season in almost every draft I'm in.
Yep.
And I struggle to take him. I mean, there's times in mock drafts where he's fell so far that I get done with it at the end of the draft. I'm like, why the hell didn't I draft that guy? Because people are afraid of the fact that Gallinari's going to miss games. Like Sam Decker was out with injury. I don't have a lot of hope that Wesley Johnson's going to be more than a 12-minute per game player this year when the Clippers are healthy. And honestly, I would hope that if Sam Decker was healthy, that he would have gotten this start.
Let's move on to the Los Angeles Lakers. Kyle Kuzma, is he the greatest Laker ever or the greatest player ever?
Can't he be both?
He probably is. What do you make of Kuzma? He's shooting 65% from the field, which is higher than his free throw percentage. He's getting a fairly large dose of usage, but he's also averaging 0.7 assists. He's averaging 3 rebounds as a small forward power forward. He is shooting a lot. He is hitting them at an insane rate. And at some point, it is going to stop. Like, he cannot continue to shoot at this level. Like, no one is shooting 65% as a wing from the field. It is literally impossible for him to continue to do that. His true shooting is 73%, which is out of control. People are thinking, oh, yeah, do I take Kyle Kuzma with a late pick? I've seen him go in round 10 in some drafts, which to me is insanity. He's going to be in the rotation. We've got no doubt about that. But it's not going to be a 28-minute role where he's averaging 20 points, which is what he's currently doing. And he's not going to shoot at this level. And if he's not going to shoot at this level, the fact that there's no other peripheral stats, it really drops his value off. Would you be okay taking Kuzma as a late flyer?
I just don't see where he gets the minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when Brook Lopez is actually playing and Julius Randle is playing all the power forward minutes he's going to get, whether you think that's 28 or 32, there's not going to be a ton of minutes left over for Kyle Kuzma with Larry Nance in that rotation at both forward spots too, potentially. And then Brandon Ingram, how many minutes does he get at small forward? I know that it feels like there's big boom and bust potential with Brandon Ingram. And you wonder if Kyle Kuzma continues to play the way he does, do they end up playing Kuzma at small forward over Brandon Ingram? But I don't see that happening. At least it might be a couple minutes taken away from Brandon Ingram, but it's not going to be 15 minutes taken away from Brandon Ingram and they're going to move Brandon Ingram to the bench or anything like that.
No.
So I have a really hard time, unless we see a trade happen. And even if we saw, I have a really hard time seeing how Kyle Kuzma gets the minutes to justify being standard league relevant. But as far as watching his tape this preseason, yeah, he's made some darn impressive moves and he's looked really good out there. You wonder how much of it is people still just kind of not buying into what he's been putting out there as far as the kind of player, the more diverse kind of player that he is. But it's been fun to watch and I hope he can keep it up for his sake. But 60, 50, 90, I don't think he's going to keep doing that. No.
We also have to remember that in these first few preseason games, Brook Lopez and Andrew Bogut haven't played. And they're leaving them one center with Thomas Bryan and Ivica Zubats, but that's given more minutes to Nance and Randle at center, opening up more of those minutes to Kuzma. So when Lopez comes back, if Bogut might not even be in the rotation, he might not even make the final roster, but Lopez is going to be there. And that takes 30 minutes away from that front court, and that's got to be taken away from someone. And you think that majority of those minutes come away from Kuzma, some from Randle, some from Zubats, some from Nance as well. But yeah, when Lopez comes back, we're not going to be able to see big chunks of Randle at center or big chunks of Nance at center because Lopez is going to be taking a majority of those minutes there. What have you made of Lonzo Ball? Because we're probably not going to see him again in the preseason as he's hurt his ankle again. We saw him miss some time in Summer League. Has Ball lived up to your expectations?
I think it was hard to read too much into everything that we saw out of the two games that he did play. And did he live up to my expectations? I didn't walk into those two preseason games going like, we need to see all this from Ball, otherwise he's a bust. So it's like I'm not reacting too much to what we've seen. Also, Brook Lopez wasn't there, and that team, the way they're going to look, and how much space is going to be on that court when Brook Lopez is out there stretching out to the 3-point line, is going to be a lot different than what we've seen with Julius Randle starting, or Ivica Zubac starting, or Thomas Bryant starting. So, yeah. I guess I'm not reading too much into what we've seen out of Lonzo Ball. However, I am concerned about this ankle injury that is kind of ambiguous, or at least being treated in an ambiguous way.
I also think that Jordan Clarkson hasn't showed really anything positive at all. I don't think he is a standard league guy. Tyler Ennis has looked better than him running the backup point guard situation. So it feels like Clarkson is going to get limited point guard minutes and play majority as the backup too. And we know Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's going to get a chunk of minutes there. So I can't see why you would want anything to do with Clarkson in any standard leagues. I think that he's going to be really limited this season, so I don't really want much to do with him there. What about Julius Randle? A lot of people are hyping him up for a breakout season. Oh, I clearly don't see it to that level. He's looked okay. He's blocking shots at a high level, but I still have my concerns with him as a player.
I'm sorry, you cut out there for me for a second. Who did you say?
Julius Randle.
He's admitted that he has had that he needs to change his mindset a little bit to pick his spots better. And when you hear him talking about that stuff, it makes you somewhat feel like, okay, at least he's aware of where he still has issues in his game and what he needs to work on. And I also, I really, the amount of space that's going to get opened up when Brook Lopez actually playing next to Randall, I think it's going to make Randall look like an even better player, or at least maybe help him look like he's taken a step this year from what he had last season too. So I don't know, man. I feel like you've got a negative air about Julius Randle, whereas like I feel there's at least reasons for optimism.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I don't really believe in him that much. I think that a lot of these assist numbers that we saw at the end of last season aren't going to be there this season. The rebounding, I believe, will go up, but I do have my question marks about him. I still think he's a guy that you draft. I just don't think he's going to be really pushing the top 60 or 70 as his ADP might suggest. The Memphis Grizzlies, Jarrell Martin, who is likely to be cut. I thought he had been cut, but he hasn't. He's playing pretty well. So is Brandon Wright. Two guys. And this team's got a massive roster squeeze. So a couple of these guys are going to have to go. But Martin and Wright have looked pretty decent. We have to remember that Marc Gasol hasn't been playing. And Jermichael Green has been playing. Didn't play the first game. And he was limited in that second game coming off the bench. So some of their minutes, there's not too much to look at there. I've been impressed with Mario Chalmers. He looks like he's going to be the backup point guard. He'll play alongside Mike Conley. We haven't seen Tyreke Evans yet due to a migraine. What do we make of this team? Have you gotten anything from, say, Chandler Parsons or from the shooting guard position?
Parsons looks like he's able to be out on the court, but I don't know how many minutes he's going to play, and I don't know how effective he's going to be because he looks slow out there. Kind of looks sloth-like, like he's got tar covering up his joints. Did you mention that McLemore hasn't, you know, he's not there yet too. So yeah. There's so many question marks about this team as far as how the minutes are going to be doled out when everybody's healthy and if people are ever healthy all at the same time. You mentioned Deontay Davis blocking a lot of shots. I wonder if Davis is actually better than what people think, but he just, because he's so, slow and sloth-like out there that people just kind of assume that he's not trying hard, even though he's just kind of, I don't know. I'm warming up to him a little bit. I think people are maybe hating on him a little bit too much, but you pointed out everything on this team. You pointed everything out, Josh, and it's all just a bunch of, we don't knows. And the things that are encouraging are from a perspective of, well, Jarrell Martin is playing well in the preseason, but we still think he's going to get cut, and Brandon Wright is playing well, but he also hasn't been able to stay healthy for how long and yeah. When. Yeah. And, you know, and like you said, Marc Gasol is not playing. So, and we didn't have Jermichael Green for the first two games and all this kind of stuff. So it's just, yeah, man. It's hard to look at people and say, like, I think what we know about this team is what you can trust. And that's that Mike Conley and Marc Gasol are going to provide good value this season And then maybe you take Chandler Parsons as a flyer at the end of the draft, and you look at Jermichael Green as somebody to take near the end of the draft too. But beyond those guys, it's hard for me to convince myself to take a lot of players. Other people are drafting Tyreke before I'm willing to grab him, to be completely honest. So because I'm like it just seems like a wasted flyer in some respects. I get it. He's the potential for him if he actually plays the minutes he would need to play would be great. But I'm just looking other places a lot of the times.
I can totally understand that. There's just so many unknowns on how all this stuff's going to play out with this team, injuries and rotation, and we just don't know. With them, Miami, Josh Richardson, shit hair, good player. He's looked fantastic. I've continued to say this. He's the best wing on this team. I think he's better than Waiters. He's better than Winslow. He's shown that so far. Winslow has struggled. He's shown some moments, but he still struggles with what he can do. Richardson has been by far the standout player on this team. He's averaging 2 steals and 1.7 blocks in 26 minutes, 1.3 triples, 3 assists. He started in place of Goran Dragic. He can play the 2. He can play the 3 as well. You have to take him in drafts. You can't let him go undrafted. The potential for him is huge, and he's really asserting himself on this team. They started Roddy Magruder in some of these games. I'm not worried about Magruder starting over Richardson. I know that Richardson's going to get his minutes because, again, he is the best player in that group of players on the wing there, including Magruder. What do you make of James Johnson, who's had quite a slow start? The minutes were going to be squeezed a little bit for him this season with the addition of Kelly Olynyk and the return of all those other players who were injured. it's going to be hard for him to achieve what he did last season, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, he wasn't the starting power forward for them last year, so, or at least not, you know, did he start at the end of the season at all?
No, I think when
they put him into the power forward spot for the starting lineup to begin the season, or for the begin the preseason with Waiters and everything, like that preseason lineup had never been used before, which I thought was weird. Like, why are you saying you're going back to the guys who were the team from last year that, you know, led the resurgence? Like, I don't know, man. I don't get the Magruder thing, to be completely honest with you. Like, if you want to get him minutes, cool. This is maybe the best way to do it. But it's not like you have a bunch of elite scoring in that starting lineup either, where you're just saying, oh, good, we've got Rodney Magruder out there to, you know, play defense, and that's about it. Although it looked like Magruder has tried to do a little bit more off the dribble this preseason so far.
I don't get Magruder. I can't see him getting anywhere near the playing time of last season, where he played 25 minutes a game. And I don't think he should be an every night rotation player. But again, the starting thing was a little bit weird, especially when you've got Richardson, Winslow, you've got Waiters, you've got Tyler Johnson, all can play that 2-3 role. I just don't see Wayne Ellington. I just don't see why Magruder would get in that mix. It appears like Bam Adebayo is not going to be an every night rotation guy, with Kelly Olynyk getting the backup minutes there. He's looked pretty solid himself. Not really sure he's a standard league guy at this point, but he's looked good playing at the four, playing behind Hassan Whiteside, who's looked good himself, and is expanding his range. He's taking some jump shots now, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, dude, Whiteside's got good touch. He's fine. Yeah. I believe in it. I didn't even comment on Josh Richardson the way I should have, because I focused on Rodney Magruder. But dude, Josh Richardson came out and said, I want to break Dwayne Wade's guard blocks record, or, you know, his Miami Heat blocks record. So the fact that Richardson's coming out and saying, like, I'm going after blocks. Oh, please, please. Somebody that you can slot into your shooting guard, small forward position this season, and he's going to, you know, give you good blocks from there. Love it.
Yeah, I love Richardson. Everyone knows that I love him. Let's talk about your hometown, or close to hometown, Milwaukee Bucks. Kyle, Giannis missed the first couple of games with the death of his father. He came back and he looked fantastic. Greg Monro has looked pretty good, but we all know that the minutes are going to be limited there because of Jason Kidd and the fact that Thon McCur hasn't played in preseason yet. Matty Dellavedova is barely playing, so Brogdon's got that locked down. Tone Snell has been disappointing, I guess. But Rashad Vaughn, what do we make of this? Like, where's this coming from?
I'm not going to overreact to it. He's looked confident out there from what I've seen, though. It's just like stuff will break down and he'll be like, oh, nobody else wants to do this. Let me take care of it. So, yeah, no, I'm not reading too much into it with Rashad. But I also wouldn't be – the guy's got good measurables, you know, he's – and there's reasons to be optimistic about the potential for Rashad Vaughn. I just – you know, he could Tony Snell us. He could definitely Tony Snell us.
He could do that, because it's not like, as I said, it's not like Snell is good. He had a good season last year. He deserved his contract. He's not that good. And he hasn't played well here so far in preseason. But if anyone had any concerns about Brogdon, you shouldn't. Adetokounmpo and Middleton are fine. And there's not really too much to say about this Bucks team. DJ Wilson's been starting, but he hasn't done anything to get me excited really about him at all. And we know that once this team is, you know, fully formed, he's not going to be playing a significant role. It might not even be a rotation guy, depending on what they do with Mirza Teletovic in that backup position. The Minnesota Timberwolves, Taj Gibson is clearly over Gorgie Jing at this point, which is not something I'm a massive fan of, but it's really tough to consider drafting Gorgie in the top 100 now, I think. Is that how you read it?
Yeah, I mean, there's the potential here for Gorgie to get most of it, like almost all of his minutes as backup center. And if that's the case, there's not going to be a lot there, because Karl Anthony Towns is still going to play like 37 to 38 minutes.
Exactly, because we're seeing Nemanja Bjelica come in and be the backup power forward there as well. So I just can't see how Jing gets 26 or 27 minutes a night if Taj is going to play 30, 32 as a starter, which is, you know, potentially what Thibodeau will do. Then Jing's just not going to have the playing time to be an impactful guy. Now, we love Jing. We know what he can do fantasy-wise, but the minutes are just a real struggle for him. We're seeing Jeff Teague be relatively assertive. He's taking more shots so far than Jimmy Butler has in the preseason, which is not a great recipe for success, but I think he's a solid mid-round guy. I don't think he's probably as good as what his ADP looks like. And Andrew Wiggins is just doing what he does, and that's score and nothing else. Pretty much, I guess, as we expected for this team.
Yeah, exactly. There's everything kind of fits in a somewhat obvious way. Wiggins said he was going to work on his rebounding, so hopefully you see more rebounding from him this year and maybe better defensive stats, but he hasn't done it in the past, so it's hard to expect it. Obviously, you're hoping for just a lot more three-pointers from Wiggins, too.
I believe he had zero rebounds in today's game, which is not a great sign. I'll have a look exactly. He scored 21 points, but he had, let's have a look, he had zero rebounds, one assist, zero steals, and zero blocks. So there you go. Did shoot 50% from three, but yeah, no other numbers there. And that's just basically, and this is exactly what he showed us for the last 3 years. So I don't think we should be getting too hyped that Wiggins is going to be adding all these different things to his game this season. The New Orleans Pelicans, we talked about Rondo a little bit earlier. Holiday's looked fine off the ball. It's even going to be better for him now. You've got Etwan Moore, Ian Clark, Jordan Crawford, Dante Cunningham, Darius Miller in the mix at those for the 2 and 3. But do any of them give you any appeal to take as like a flyer in the late round, or there's many other options that you'd prefer on other teams?
I mean, has Etwan Moore, like, has, even when he's gotten minutes in the past, has he ever really been a high enough volume guy to lean on?
Yeah, not really.
I just don't know, man. You don't expect any of these guys to really claim enough minutes from night to night. You might, because if we look to last season, wherever there was an issue with Gentry trying to fill holes in the rotation due to somebody being out, you might see one guy play 25 minutes for four games and then go back down to playing 12 minutes or something like that, or 16. I think it's going to be situational in a lot of regards as far as who we see added to that guard rotation next to Jrue Holiday.
I imagine that Moore will start, but he won't be really a standard league type of guy next to Cunningham and next to Holiday. The big interesting thing to me is Cheick Diallo being the first big off the bench. So if Boogie or Davis miss time, then his value goes up really, really nicely, especially for deeper leagues. And Boogie and Davis are fine. They're going to put up their numbers. I don't have any concerns about them working together. They did what they needed to do last season, and it's continued this season. Not that that's a big surprise. The New York Knicks, Timmy Hardaway, is getting a lot of shots. He's going to play some point guard as well. Anything that's bothered you about Hardaway at all? You just feel pretty good about what you're seeing from him as that sort of mid to late round player?
I think we're anticipating him being arguably the second option on that team. I think that may depend on whether or not Cantor starts. But everything you're seeing out of Tim Hardaway, it looks like the progress he made last year is becoming a better ball handler and just a more confident player. You see that in the preseason right now from him. And it'll be interesting to see how big of a jump he does take this year, if he does take one.
Yeah, I'm pretty interested in him in those later rounds. Frank Ntilikina has looked competent. I think he's going to start before 2018 ticks over. Ramon Sessions is going to start if Frank doesn't, but I wouldn't be taking Sessions with a draft pick in a 12 or a 14 team league. I'd be okay at looking at Frank if I've got stashability in a weekly changes or a roto format just to see what happens. But I'm not sure his upside is all that high for this season. The center position is the weird one. Bill Hernan Gomez is going to be starting in their game today. Kyler Quinn started in one of them. Enes Kanter started in another one. I think we can just forget about Joakim Noah. He is not going to be a big enough part of the rotation on a nightly basis. I would imagine Kanter and Hernan Gomez play the bulk of those minutes, but are any of them okay bets in standard leagues? We've talked about Cantor before, and we both think that, yeah, he's a decent late-round guy, especially in roto leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I'm targeting Cantor late in even my head-to-head leagues if he's available late enough. But there's enough volatility with his potential production that you don't want to overinvest in him. I am targeting Cantor a lot in my rotisserie leagues for his percentages, and I'd be willing to take him. Oh shoot, man. I mean, it kind of depends, but it's the late middle rounds, kind of like 8, 9, 10. If he can fall to me there, I'm really happy.
Yep. I'm happy with him in that sort of zone as well. Doug McDermott, just the same old Doug McDermott. Don't get your hopes up there. Michael Beasley and Courtney Lee, I'm going to take some of those minutes. Do you have any interest in those guys for standard league situations?
I'm always going to have a little bit of hope for Beasley to kind of crawl into relevance and to maintain relevance. The fan in me wants to see the Ntilikina, Hardaway, Beasley, Kristaps, and Enes Kanter starting lineup on opening night, because those are my favorite players. But who fits in best. Maybe McDermott fits in best. Maybe Courtney Lee fits in best. But I still think most of Hardaway's minutes are going to come at shooting guard, given the other options that the Knicks have at small forward, because it's not just Beasley and McDermott. It's Lance Thomas. It's Mindaugas Kuzminskas who could play there too. It's hard for me to see Courtney Lee kind of, unless he gets moved into the starting lineup, but isn't he 32? He's not part of the youth. He's not part of the youth movement, you know? Like, so I don't know. I don't see how he fits really.
Yep. And you can see him being a trade candidate at some point or limiting minutes. There is a lot of, much like we talked about with Brooklyn earlier, there's just this bunch of guys who are all at a similar level, and that leads to a lot of confusion. No one who really stands out. Is Beasley better? Is McDermott better? Is Lee better? Is Kuzminskas better? Is Thomas better? Like, who knows? Like, they don't stand out enough over each other to make you say, well, this definitely is going to be the case. And you could say the same with Hernan Gomez and Cantor and O'Quinn at center and Ntilikina or Sessions. There's just so much unknown with this Knicks team. The Oklahoma City Thunder, Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, they're doing what they need to do. Russ was back in the last game, played one quarter, then played in today's game against Melbourne United and played more minutes there. I don't think there's too much to be concerned about any of these guys. They're going to figure out, especially when your other starters are Robertson and Adams, who are low usage players. I don't think we need to be too concerned about them. And the fact that there's no high usage guys on the bench, so when they stagger these players, they're going to have their opportunities be fairly similar. Jeremy Grant is in the rotation here, playing some minutes. Terrence Ferguson has looked more competent than what I thought he would. But has anything from OKC surprised you or made you change your opinion on them?
What do you think about Paul George playing 39 minutes in a preseason game?
Yeah, it seems a little irresponsible.
But doesn't it make you feel like, I don't know, it makes me, I'm intrigued about how many minutes Donovan is going to play Paul George this season if he's doing stuff like that. Carmelo taking 19 shots today, hitting 4 three-pointers. And Westbrook played 3 less minutes, took only 10 shots. I don't know, do you read into that much at all?
Not really. The shot distribution in this game? Not really. Paul George shot 29%, Melo shot 32%, Russ shot 30%. There was a lot of weirdness in this game. I don't read too much into that. I think that there is a chance that they all have usage that's fairly similar to each other. I would expect that as the season shakes out, Melo to drop off just a little bit though.
So what are people gigging about with Terrence Ferguson? Because like I keep hearing people get really excited about him
because he looked shit playing here last season. Like he didn't look like he could deal with it. Like he struggled, but the fact that he's looked okay, like he's been able to show his athleticism, show a little bit defensively, like he's hit some shots, like he's looked like he could be a rotation part, or you're part of the rotation early on, which is not something I necessarily thought would be the case to begin the season. So that's he doesn't look fantastic. He's not going to have a huge role, but the fact that, especially I guess with Abrines struggling with an injury and Pat Patterson struggling, that they're going to need these guys, and the fact that he hasn't looked horrendous is a positive.
Okay, that's fair. There was a point in the game today against Melbourne that I was the announcer, Terrence Ferguson made a take to the rack and he missed the layup, and the announcer was like, "Oh, you see how he makes that move?" And I'm just like, "He missed the shot. Like, what are you talking about? It didn't work."
I don't know. I don't know what we're going to get out of Ferguson, but at least he's shown.
No, I mean, he's a defense first guy, right? I mean, like, even if he does go to get out there and get minutes, it's going to be because he's being a defensive stopper. It's not, he's going to be, Roberson 2.0 with maybe worse offense for this year.
Yeah, I would say that's likely. The Orlando Magic, Kyle, Aaron Gordon is good. He's putting up good numbers. His ADP was always ridiculous. He's a guy that should be knocking on the door of the top 50. Alfred Payton in that similar role. I've felt really good about seeing them play, especially Gordon.
Yeah, no, I'm getting excited about Orlando and their potential this season, and the fact that they might have finally found a way to put everything together. And I've always been a believer in Vogel anyway. So to see Aaron Gordon kind of showing out, this is the first time he's had the same coach to start the next season. So the fact that he's actually starting this season off on a good foot is what's good.
The other thing is that Jonathan Isaac is going to be really good. Like he already knows what he's doing defensively. He's almost averaging a triple one in 23 minutes a game. He's scoring, he's rebounding. I know we've talked about Isaac a lot, but he is clearly to me the fourth guy you want in dynasty rookie drafts. He might sneak into having top 150 value this season. They played him at the five alongside Gordon as well, which is what this is going to be the future of this team. He is really, really good. He's going to be able to stay on the court defensively. He's going to get defensive stats. He's going to be a surprise player this year. And people are going to realize that, I think he's got a chance to be better than Josh Jackson. I think he's got a chance to be better than Jason Tatum. I think people are going to be really interested to see what he can do. And I've been super impressed with what I've seen from him. And Terrence Ross has been starting over John Simmons as well. Simmons is putting up some okay bench numbers, but I don't think either of them are must draft players for standard leagues. If Ross is going to give you some threes, Simmons, maybe some defensive numbers, but they're more going to be streamer type players.
It'll be interesting if Vogel decides at some point to put in one of the more defensive minded guys in Jonathan Isaac or Jonathan Simmons over Terrence Ross or even Evan Fournier. And I don't really see Fournier again moved out of the starting lineup, but it'll be interesting if we see that, because there's probably going to be a lot of times this year where somebody gets pulled really quick because they just need more defense out there on the perimeter.
The Philadelphia 76ers, Rashawn Holmes is dealing with a fractured wrist, which will probably keep him out 4 to 5 weeks at least. A lot of people were looking at him as, you got to draft him early if you've got Embiid, you got it as a handcuff, or you had to really snipe the Embiid owner. And this is what I said before the season and what I'm seeing now, is that he's not the guaranteed backup there. We're seeing Amir Johnson play minutes, we're seeing Jahlil Okafor look pretty good in that position. So now that Holmes is out, I don't think there's any need to be drafting him, but these other guys have looked good, and that backup center situation is going to be pretty fluid in Philadelphia.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jahlil Okafor looks like he is mentally healthy, physically healthy. He looks impressive out there on the court, in my opinion. And I almost want Jahlil to become the backup center on this team and to go out there and dominate and just to make them that much more of an intriguing team. But it does seem like he's destined to end up getting traded sooner than later. Amir Johnson is a confident player. I mean, they brought him in here to be a guy who, when he gets out on the court, he doesn't screw things up, and you know, he makes good plays and doesn't make mistakes. So Jared Bayless, I mean, yeah. Anyways, front court rotation. We haven't even seen Dario Saric be a part of it. So anybody who was kind of like getting on the Holmes train, I don't really see where he was going to get the minutes, man. It's kind of like the Boban thing. It's like, what rotation are you envisioning for this team? Because that guy's going to be on the bench a lot of the time.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't see him getting enough minutes to be a regular part of this rotation. Robert Covington's looked fine, which is great. He's solid. JJ Redick's looking good. Ben Simmons is the favorite for Rookie of the Year now, I would say. The assists are good. Markel Fultz, what have you made of him?
I'm not trying to overreact too much because he always had the ball in his hands in college, right?
Yep.
And he doesn't have the ball in his hands nearly as much right now. So he's trying to learn how to play off of a new teammate who's also a rookie in Ben Simmons. And I do, like, Ben Simmons has looked impressive, but his shooting is a big issue. His shot selection, Look, he's going to be freaking amazing when it all kind of comes together. But I do think that there's, I just think he's going to have some ugly performances sometimes. So we'll see.
I'm sure that'll be the case for him. Yeah, Fultz is definitely struggling at this point. I think he'll be hard to own in the first month of the season, but I would hold him onto him in that case, and we'll just see how it pans out. But he hasn't looked great so far. We haven't seen Timo Taylor-Wiwu-Cabarrot, and we haven't seen Joel Embiid yet, but it appears like they're both tracking to be ready for the preseason. Oh, sorry, for the regular season opener. Not that I think the Wiwu-Cabarrot is going to be necessarily in the rotation anyway. Justin Anderson's getting minutes for deeper league people. He's playing that backup role to Covington, and Jared Bayless is back, and he's going to be a part of the rotation as well, Kyle.
Yeah, no, Bayless has looked good. So, yep. And he's there to do what he's there to do, which is bang threes and guard the smaller guards guard the people that you don't want Ben Simmons guarding.
What about Phoenix? How's Alex Len, who's sort of come out of nowhere and just said, well, don't forget about me, guys. I'm actually good. Alan Williams is out for pretty much the whole season. Tyson Chandler is decrepit. What do we make of Len? Is he a guy that you look at and go, well, with my last pick, let's have a crack here, because there is definitely an open position there at center.
Is there? Because I mean,
I don't know. I don't know what are they going to start Chris there and play Josh Jackson at the four?
That's what I'm seeing, right? I mean, that's that. Or is it Josh Jackson or is it T.J. Warren at the four? It doesn't really matter, but yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not an Alex Len believer, and I'm not gonna overreact to these two games. I need to go watch the tape on these performances. Okay, so I will admit that I didn't see what Alex Len did. And yeah, you look at his box score and you're like, oh wow. Okay. Yeah. Maybe he's going to be something this year. And it wouldn't be completely surprising. He's 24 years old to see him come out with a different mindset and maybe having his role limited last year when he probably thought he was going to be stepping into larger minutes and playing a limited role at a time where every other young guy was getting big minutes and as many minutes as they can handle. Yeah, maybe something kind of kicked him in the butt this offseason and turned it around, but I haven't seen the game tape to be able to really comment on it, to be honest.
Josh Jackson has looked good. He's scoring well, he's shooting well, he's hitting threes, his defensive stuff is fine. Yeah, him getting the minutes might be a problem, but as I said, we're seeing him play at the four, so maybe we see that. It's not like Marquise Chris has been super productive. I'm not a Chris fan at all as a player, but if the minutes are there, then the fantasy numbers will come. But if he gets overtaken by Josh Jackson, I wouldn't be surprised at all because I think Jackson's a superior player and a superior prospect to Chris. So that is a possibility there. So Jackson's a name to watch. I still do like Chris as a pick in the later rounds because if the minutes are there, they said the stats will come. But it's like, can he actually stake a claim and deserve those minutes? Because he looked shit in summer league. He hasn't looked awesome he's blocking shots, but he hasn't looked awesome in preseason. So there is, I guess, a level of concern there. TJ Warren hurt his head, but he just got a cut. He's not dealing with concussion, so we don't have to worry about that. Whatever that weird issue was that affected him last season. So that's good to see there with him. And Troy Daniels is going to hit a lot of threes. You want to talk about guys who are going to be on the waiver wire, who are going to give you three-pointers. Troy Daniels is going to be that player. They have very limited depth at shooting guard with Brandon Knight and Devon Reed out. So Daniels could come in, play 15 minutes a night and hit two threes a game and be that three-point streaming option that you can look at. Portland, second to only Kyle Kuzma. I think the Caleb Swanigan hype is getting pretty real here. He started the last two preseason games. Do you think that he can hold on to that role when Noah Vonleh comes back? Or are you buying Swanigan as a guy that, yeah, we need to pay some attention to?
I'm not buying any of these power forward guys right now with Portland, to be completely honest, because I think that Vonleh, when he's back, is going to be stepping right back in there. It's fun to see what Swanigan and Collins are doing right now. I think it's a little bit too much. It's a little bit more hype than anything right now. Yeah, to be honest,
I'm with you. I don't see taking Swanigan with my last pick or anything like that. I just don't see it. I can't see that being the case. It's just too many guys there. Yeah, look, he's looked good in preseason, but people have been fooled by preseason performances before. Yeah, maybe one of them or two of them turn out, but it's not like every big performance really works that way. Dame and CJ are fine. Nurkic looks good. He's taking threes as well. Do you think that's a real thing?
Yes. He said he's going to take them when they come, but he's not going to force it. So hopefully that means that he shoots them at a decent percentage. Can I pivot back to something from Phoenix? The assists out of Eric Bledsoe and Devin Booker, are they like turning Devin Booker into the primary facilitator over Eric Bledsoe?
That's what it looks like at the moment. We're seeing a lot come out of Booker. He's averaged, what, 5 assists per game so far. Bledsoe's at 2.5. So that's going to really increase his value. That's the thing that he needed to do to get his fantasy value way up. And I think he's got more potential to do that than, say, someone like an Andrew Wiggins, who are both, those 20-point scorers who lack in other areas. Booker, that's why I would take Booker significantly higher than Wiggins in any fantasy draft this year. So that is a possibility, I guess. And it looks to be the way that they're transitioning. I'm not sure how much it sticks in the regular season, but every time that Bledsoe's been out, we've seen Booker take that role on more often as well.
Thanks.
Let's go back to Portland. Mo Harkless's usage is really low, as it was post All-Star. I know Matt's pretty high on him as a sleeper in the last round. I'm not so big on Mo. The minutes will be there, but I just don't know what he's going to do enough to be useful or have enough upside in that position. Are you in on Harkless? Because the role's going to be there, but what's he going to do with it?
Well, that's just it. They keep actually looking at different guys at small forward. Like, didn't we see Evan Turner start? Yep. And now El Farouk Aminu started today. So I don't know that Harkless is going. Yes, he's going to get. He should get plenty of minutes. He should get close to 30 minutes. But I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't. If he struggles for some reason and gets, you know, only 27 minutes a game or something like that. So, I think Harkless is more like a deep league guy, just because, like you said, he doesn't take a lot of shots. He doesn't command the ball.
Yeah, he's not a high rebounder. He's not getting many passes. Yeah, the defensive numbers will be okay, but there is, I just don't see massive upside there in Mo for this season. The Sacramento Kings, I spoke about this with Greg the other day, with Dave Yeager starting that retirement starting five that he had. It's, I don't even know what to make of this team, because they started all those old guys and then they sat them all for the second game. One thing I do know, Kyle, is it appears that Bogdan Bogdanovic is way down the pecking order in terms of minutes at this point, and my hope for him. Tell me about Bogdan then. Go on, let's go.
He played in Eurobasket, okay? It's the same thing that's happening with Dario Saric. Yep. He is 25 years old. He's not a regular rookie. He's better than Justin Jackson. He's better than everybody they have at small forward. He's going to be if you've watched the limited minutes he's played in the preseason, he's running that pick and roll really well. There's times where you think that he's cutting down off the dribble and he's going to go for like a difficult layup. Nope, he takes another dribble that you weren't expecting and then kicks it out to the other side for an open three-pointer. The guy's going to help them be a better team. I don't even, there's part of me that looks at what De'Aaron Fox is doing so far. And I'm like, why you got George Hill on the team? So, no, I mean, the Bogdan Bogdanovic, good, cool. I love that he's playing limited minutes right now, because a couple weeks into the season, he's going to be starting and he's going to be playing 28 minutes a night. And everybody's going to be like, I wish I had him on my team. Sorry. I'm all in. As look for one of your last flyer picks, I'm still under the Bogdanovic spell, okay?
Yep.
Because there are reasons to look at why he's played limited minutes so far and discern, like, and then look at that damn roster and say, no, there's nobody else to play at small forward. And when the few times that we've actually gotten information out of the coach, Yeager, it's been good stuff about how there's going to be the distribution of minutes is going to be about, you know, 26 to 28 and, you know, 18 to 22 or whatever. Like, there's going to be reasonable distribution of minutes. That's the plan. Garrett Temple, Vince Carter, these guys are going to get put on the back burner. We've heard Yeager say that several times already in preseason two, where there's been talks about potentially sitting guys out, not just for like one game, but for a stretch of games. So, Zach Randolph, take the next week off.
Yep.
You're just not going to play in the next four games, because we want to get a consistent look at Scal and this other young player. So, you know, Henry Giles, whenever he returns, stuff like that. So, like, it's going to be frustrating. It's going to be confusing at times in some respects. But I also feel like Yeager's kind of put out there that, like, look, guys are going to fight for minutes, but we also have a direction here. We know what we're going to be, and the players that we've brought in to be those vets know what role they're playing. So, you know, I don't think they're going to be surprised when they, and then he explained all the sitting guys out stuff. So I look at the Eurobasket thing with Bogdanovic and Dario Saric and other guys who haven't played or have been limited. And I think that he's going to be a key part earlier than what everybody's thinking right now.
I feel pretty confident with Willie Cauley-Stein. I feel good about Scal. They're getting their minutes. They're looking good. I'm not really worried about Zach Randolph and Kufos taking their playing time. Look, dumb shit can happen, but I'm not too worried about that. You've made me feel a little bit better about Bogdan. Now, I love what he can do. I still think that he's clearly the best wing on this team. I think he's better than Buddy Hield. I think he's better than Vince Carter. I think he's better than Justin Jackson and Garrett Temple. But it's not about what I think. It's about what the coaching staff thinks. So we'll see how that plays out, but as you said, look, the upside there is fine for him in that last pick. I love Scal, love Cauley-Stein, and Fox has looked really, really good as well, but I think his minutes will be limited come the start of the season. But as Hill starts sitting out games towards the end of the season, we're going to see a lot coming out of De'Aaron, but I've been really impressed with what we've seen there from him. The San Antonio Spurs, Kyle, what's your level of concern with Kawhi?
I'm not drafting him, because where you have to draft him... I mean, if he falls to you in the second round or something like that, maybe you go, I'll take that guy. But I don't know enough about it, and I don't want to deal with that.
Yep, no, that's fair enough. Now, I think I said this the other day that if I had to pick eight, I would definitely be considering someone over him, Jokic or LeBron there at pick eight. I'm not completely worried about Kawhi. There is definitely a level of concern there, but I'm not panicking totally. But I would, if I had pick eight, I would take one of those other two guys. Maybe I'd let him fall to 10. I'm not sure what I'd do at pick 10. Would I take Chris Paul? Would I go with Boogie there? Would I take John Wall? Like, what would I do at that spot if Kawhi was around? That's sort of my inflection point as to what I would do there. But at pick eight or nine, I would take one of those other two guys ahead of him. I think at this point, just because of the risk factor that is involved. We've seen DeJounte Murray start. He looks like he's going to lock down that starting role, but Pat Mills is going to probably get the bulk of those minutes. Mills has been impressive. Murray's looked pretty good there as well. What about Rudy Gay, who's back now? He's playing, returning from that Achilles injury. Do you think that he can have any real value this season?
If he plays a lot at power forward, I would get really intrigued by what he could be. And especially if they decide at some point to start him and Kawhi together and go with LaMarcus at center, I would love that. But I have so many reservations about Rudy Gay. I just kind of see the Wesley Matthews situation where he comes back, he's a lot less efficient. And you're just, you're getting like 75% of the same player. And maybe that's good if you can get Rudy Gay late in your draft, but he's not somebody I've been personally targeting.
What do you make of the Danny Green revival? Scored another 11 today. He scored 20 in the game before. He blocked two more shots today. He's looked like the Danny Green from a couple of years ago to a degree, but he's looked much better. Do you think he is worth a flyer?
Yeah, I mean, especially for turnover leagues where you want somebody who's going to give you blocks potentially, but not hurt you in turnovers, give you three pointers, he can fit well in turnover leagues, especially, but it's the fact that his value is so combustible in some respects. Like I've never been one I've seen such a low ceiling with Danny Green that he's never been of much interest to me as far as my fantasy teams. I respect the heck out of the kind of real life player he is, but he's never been somebody who really I could find much intrigue for on most of my teams.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. Let's move on to Toronto. Norman Powell got his extension. He looks really good. He looks better than CJ Miles, which is not unexpected. But has he done enough to make you consider him as a guy you want to take with the last pick?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. You cut out there. That's I feel like a butthead.
No, you
CJ Miles?
No, Norm Powell.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you're looking at Norm right now, and I like him in rotisserie leagues. I am worried about the CJ Miles impact, but I feel like 28 minutes a game is you're gonna see him getting that or more on most nights.
Yep.
I like Norm Powell's potential, but the ceiling's going to be muted. It's just going to, unless they end up giving him a starting job. And I don't, and even in that starting job, they'd be bringing somebody else off the bench and playing them big minutes if Casey's rotations from previous seasons hold true. So that's my concern, is just the ceiling. But later, especially like if you got like an extended roster where you've got 14 man, I mean, Powell becomes really intriguing in those later rounds for me.
Valanciunas has looked good, but we know his minutes are going to be limited, so that really puts a cap on what he can do. Bebe Noguera, at this point, appears to be ahead of Jakob Poeltl in the rotation. I'm not sure how long that sticks for. Pascal Siakam has been disappointing to me. Lowry and DeRozan are just doing what they do, but what do you make of Ibaka, who's shooting 11% from threes, taking six threes a game? He's not hitting them. He just seems like he just refuses to go inside the line at all.
Is how long? So is he traded is he going to get traded this year? Essentially, did they sign him just so that they had an asset so that they could trade? I'm really confused about what Ibaka is doing. It looks like he's trying to do way too much when he's out there right now. And maybe that's just him trying to do more in the preseason because the coaches have may potentially asked him to do more or try to
that's
do more.
Possible.
But he's got to dial it back and just simplify it. I mean, for the most part, he should be a catch.
In the playoffs, he was taking way too many threes, and I don't get it.
I don't know, man.
All right.
I mean, I'm can I look. I don't. I Ibaka's been, he's somebody who we've seen his block rate just decline every single season for like the last 7 years. So it's, and he's not somebody I'm really targeting. But then again, like the situation in Toronto, man, I just wish they would trade Jonas to get him out of there so that they could just do what they want to do, which is start Ibaka at center. Then maybe they slide CJ Miles up to power forward and you've got Norm in there at small forward, and then all of our dreams come true.
Exactly. Let's move on to Utah. Dante Exum looks like his season is done with a separated shoulder. We don't have official confirmation that his season is done, but he's going to be missing a big chunk of time without any doubt there. So we've got the option here of Raul Neto moving into the backup point guard role, or Donovan Mitchell sliding across to point guard, allowing Alec Burks to get into the rotation, who's looked really good there. Yeah, that's more for deeper league situations. We're not looking at Mitchell as a standard league sort of player, but how do you see that happening with Mitchell? Could he become a standard league guy this season?
If Rodney Hood can't stay healthy or struggles to fill that scoring load that they need him to score to fill this year, I think Donovan Mitchell could step up. And we've already seen he's been super aggressive off the bench this preseason, and that's what we expected him to be, because where the hell else were the shots going to come from with this team when you got guys like Tabo Sefolosha and even Joe Johnson, who is, you know, at one time a great scorer in the league. He's kind of he's not as aggressive as he used to be. So, yeah, definitely Donovan Mitchell and Alec Burks is interesting. If he's actually healthy, I mean, that's been the question mark with him for several seasons now. But Alec Burks, he seems to have a good mindset this year. He talked about the fact that he's trying to refine his game, not play so hard, but play more smart, not worry about necessarily getting to the rack. He's adding more three-pointers to his game and stuff to kind of cut down on the beating that his body has taken in the past. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Burks can stay healthy and carve out a decent role off the bench, because he's always been somebody who you looked at and said, oh, that guy should be able to score and maybe help me at the, you know, with my free throws or do well at the free throw line. And if he can actually add consistent three-pointers to his game, it makes him a lot more interesting, especially for deep leagues.
Yeah, he's been good so far in preseason. I think he's going to, with the Exum injury, he'll move into an every-night rotational role. Hood's taken on the extra responsibility and looked pretty solid there as well. Rubio and Ingles have both struggled so far. I'm not really too concerned about the people say, are you worried about Rubio's field goal percentage? I know it's going to be an issue regardless. I'm not overly concerned there. But what a positive is how Derek Favors has looked. I really like him as a late pick now. He's looked relatively spry. He's going to absorb some of that scoring load that this team needs as well. So I've been impressed with Favors next to Gobert. Have you?
Yeah, Favors looks all right. It's just been such a small sample size that
exactly.
I'm still waiting for the other shoe to fall as far as hearing about, you know, knee soreness and we're going to, you know, he's going to be limited for, you're going to have limited minutes or something like that. You hope that's not the case, obviously, but that's the concern with Favors. He's available late in drafts. So if you can grab him in, you know, a late enough round, I definitely love the upside that you have for him there.
The last team for us to talk about before we round out this extraordinarily long podcast is the Washington Wizards. Jason Smith started one of the preseason games over Kelly Oubre with Markieff Morris out, but Maya Oubre has started one of the other games. Is there anything there for those guys short term?
You would hope that for Oubre, just that he would, as long as Markieff Morris is out, that Oubre would get close to 30 minutes a night and provide some value, but I don't think it's guaranteed.
He looks good the last two games, Oubre. He scored 14 in the first one of those. He scored 12 today against the Cavs with 5 boards and shot 50% in a starting role, but it was hard to judge too much. Wall played 7 minutes, Beal played 9, you know, Porter played 7. So we were getting mostly backups on this team. I have been impressed with my boy Tomas Satoransky with Tim Frazier out with that groin injury. Satoransky's moved into the backup point guard role. I believe that Satoransky should be the backup point guard anyway. I'm a big fan of his. He looks more comfortable this season. He is still someone I like for deeper leagues and for dynasty leagues. He's looked solid. Sheldon Mack suffered what looks like a torn Achilles today, so he's likely going to be out for the season. Not that he's having too much of an impact. And Mike Scott's the other guy who's going to get some minutes at power forward while Morris is out. What about Jody Meeks, who's hitting threes at a significant rate? Does he move into that Troy Daniels, Wayne Ellington three-point streamer category for you?
Yeah, totally. I mean, deeper leagues, if you need three-pointers, that's hopefully Jody Meeks could get Yeah, you can use him there. It just, I mean, how many minutes is he going to play a night?
Yeah, 18 maybe, 17.
Maybe.
Yeah, because what Beal's going to play is 38 or so. So yeah, it's going to be hard for him to get enough playing time. But he is going to be interesting. All he's going to do is shoot threes pretty much. So we can look at that. Look at him in that sort of a role. I think that's really about it for the Wizards. Yeah, nothing to really talk about with Wall or Beal or Porter. Yeah, Gortat's going to have his role limited by Mahinmi this season. I don't really like him as a guy that I want to take inside the top 100, and nothing has changed there in preseason with looking at that. And Kyle, I reckon that might do it for this show. Anything else you want to add about preseason or anything in general you want to talk about?
No, man, that was 2 hours of podcasting, man. I'm done.
It was. We are out. Go and follow Kyle on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA and follow myself at Redrock_Beeble and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and leave a review. That would be fantastic. Kyle, thank you for coming on and talking for 2 hours about preseason NBA basketball.
Thanks for having me on, Josh. It's my funnest part of the week.
No worries. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Enes Kanter.